Everyone, and welcome to minute 57 of season 10 of Movie Run Minute, the daily podcast, where we hijack our way through the 1974 action thriller, The Taking of Pelham 123, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again today is Travis Bowe of Minute of Thieves. Welcome back to the show, Travis.
Hello there.
Hello there.
Were you tempted at all? I'm curious, like hearing you do your intro and everything. Were you tempted to do this movie in like 1, 2, 3 minutes at a time?
No, not at all.
Okay.
Not at all. I got to tell you that, this is my 11th movie that I'm doing. And, 9 of them I've done 1 minute at a time. And one of them, or two of them, I did 5 minutes at a time. And it's not the same when you do them 5 minutes at a time as opposed to 1 minute at a time. So I prefer to stick to the 1 minute if I can.
Okay? Yeah, I agree.
A little spoiler alert for anyone who's looking ahead. Season 11 will also be a 5 minute at a time one, but that's just because of the sheer amount of minutes that are in that particular choice. Again, people can start trying to guess if you want, but you got another 48 minutes of this movie to go before you're going to find out what that movie is, what I'm going to be doing in the next series. So in the next season. But that one I'm going to have to also be doing 5 minutes at a time, because otherwise I think it'll take me like a year and a half to do it.
Yeah. Like for the listeners, I know what Rob's doing next, and I can be bought.
Just make sure you split it with me.
We'll see.
Okay. That's fair. That's fair. All right. So, minute 57 begins with the money finally being ready and ends with Albert being concerned. So we ended things yesterday with the cops starting to get a little bit antsy because the borough commander wants to know why they haven't started moving, and the cops who are actually dealing with having to transport the money don't know what everything's being held up with, but they know that in the end they're the ones who are going to get in trouble if they don't if they don't do what they should, if they don't get their own time. How's that?
Yeah.
So yeah, it's a little bit of a problem. So the minute starts by we get a shot of two motorcycle cops that are sitting and waiting by the door, and then we see someone run out with one big bag saying U.S. Federal Reserve on it, and they give it to the driver, who passes it on to his partner along the way, and one of them turns to the other and goes, "This is $1 million." He says, "It's what it buys, Albert, not what it weighs."
Yeah,
and so it's pretty funny from that perspective.
It's a good line.
Yeah.
Did you look up the weight of $1 million?
Did you?
I did.
Of course I did too.
Yeah. I went, I'm curious what route you went. I went the ChatGPT route, where I specified in the 1974 movie, The Taking of Pelham 123, the thieves requested a specific denomination for the $1 million ransom. How much would that $1 million weigh? I asked it that way because I couldn't remember, what the breakdown was of what they required. So
did ChatGPT remember?
It seemed to. It said, "Great question. In the 1974 film, the hijackers demand a $1 million ransom in $50 bills."
Well, that's actually not true, but okay.
Okay. I couldn't remember. Like I said, I couldn't remember what it was. So
they wanted
so I
half guess, and half. They wanted okay. half in 50 and half in 100.
Okay. Okay. So then my stuff will be wrong then. So no, what do you got?
No, but it's actually good, because what I did was I just said, "How much does $1 million weigh?"
Oh.
And the response I got was, is $1 million in $100 bills would weigh approximately 22 pounds or 10 kilos.
Okay. So
So now what we can do is we can half mine and half
Right.
yours and then try and figure out how much it should
All
weigh.
right. So
Yes.
mine is, let's see. Step one, figure out how many bills. $1 million and 50s is 20,000 bills. The weight of a single bill is about 1 gram. So 20,000 bills is about 20,000 grams. And that converted to pounds is about 44 pounds. So,
So that's twice the amount, which makes
Yeah.
sense, you know, because if we're dealing with $100 bills, as opposed to, so basically we would have to half mine and then half yours.
Yeah, so what, 33 pounds would
So
be in the
33
middle?
pounds. There you go.
All right.
That's right. But so you know, these guys have to, having to carry 33 pounds is pretty heavy. It does not look like that bag was holding 33 pounds.
Oh, I don't know, 'cause oh, I think it does. When I looked, when I was going off of 44 pounds, I was like, what else weighs 44 pounds? And some of the sites were like, oh, a bag of like water softener salt can weigh about 40 pounds. It's like, and so that's about the same size as this bag. So I could see about that size bag holding 30 pounds easily,
Okay,
33.
it's really funny. I just did a quick search to see what weighs 33 pounds, and the answer is an example of something that weighs 33 pounds is a 15 kilogram cod.
The one I wanted to I was excited to
Doesn't
share
happen.
the one I was excited to share for 44 pounds was, what weighs 44 pounds? Oh, an elephant's heart.
Okay,
So
here they also say a cinder block.
yeah, right.
Or potentially an animal like a large domestic dog or a young child. So yeah, I don't know. You're a very large cat.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. That tells me so much. It is 1 1/5 times as heavy as a gold bar. There you go. So you see, Zeus couldn't carry a 33 pound
Right.
gold bar. So. Okay, fair enough. Now we see these motorcycle cops.
Yeah.
So the first thing I think of when I think of motorcycle cops is Chips. You know,
Okay.
I grew up on that in actually part, at the beginning it wasn't reruns, but eventually it was reruns of that show. Yeah, so I've always liked the idea of motorcycle cops from that perspective. Now, what do you know about motorcycle cops?
Probably not much. I'm guessing I'm going to learn something about motorcycle cops. I'm aware of them in theory, I've seen them.
Okay, well, first of all, they're mostly used to enforce traffic laws and as escort vehicles, which obviously makes a lot of sense here. When do you think they had the very first police motorcycle patrol in the US?
Ooh. How old are motorcycles? Like 1920s, 1910s? Something like that.
That I didn't look up.
Yeah.
But I believe I mean I have talked about them in the future, in the past,
Yeah.
not in the future. I've talked about them in the past, not in the future. I'm trying to remember when. In what season did we have motorcycles? If we're
Yeah.
talking about motorcycles,
But
it can't be.
I'm gonna say, but I think it's like between the 1910s and 20s, like somewhere. But regardless, like I'll say motorcycle cops, the mid to late 1920s.
No, you should have gone with your gut. It was 1911.
Okay.
Yeah, the Berkeley Police Department. The chief's name was August Vollmer. He's credited with organizing the first official police motorcycle patrol in the US in 1911. There were some police forces that didn't have them as a patrol. They would have like singular vehicles. But like in Detroit, they had from 1908, and Evansville, Illinois had a motorcycle that was used also in 1908, and the Portland Police Bureau had a cop who used his own personal motorcycle in 1909. But the idea of using a motorcycle was it was an inexpensive public transportation, and both in the police and in the armed forces, it grew because it was much easier for them to get around with them. Obviously, as I mentioned, the TV show Chips, which ran from 1977 to 1983, it popularized police motorcycles in general, and it became very an iconic look at the way that police officers on motorcycles were in the 80s and 90s, just by watching that show. Ever since then, things have obviously changed. In as of recent years, they have specialized police motorcycles that they've been using, and they no longer use the Kawasaki's that they used to use back in the days of Chips and things like that. They have things that are a little bit faster and sleeker, and get the job done a little bit better. Now, do you know what a the nickname for a motorcycle cop is?
No.
Right. So, motorcycle cops are just usually known as either motor officers or motormen. But
Okay.
some of the nicknames they're sometimes referred to as wheelmen, and there are other places that just refer to them as Evel Knievel.
Okay.
Because it makes a lot of sense that
Gotcha.
they would call them that.
All right.
There is another name that I remember hearing. I just can't remember what. They also refer to them as saints. It's an acronym for stops anything in no
Oh, okay.
time.
And I like that. Yeah, that's better than just Wheelman or whatever the other one was.
Yeah, exactly.
I wanted to talk about the police car.
Okay.
Because I've liked this era, I guess, of New York police vehicles with that lightish blue with the one white stripe going down the side. And there's a Amazing Spider-Man cover. It's number 306, and they're on that cover, they're doing an homage to Action Comics number one, where Superman holds the car and smashes it. It's Spider-Man holding a police car. It's like more of an 80s style, 80s body style car, but it has this same, paint scheme. And like, I've always just liked that cover. It's very striking. And so I looked up the sort of this era police cars, and it's this blue and white, sort of scheme. I found a YouTuber called, yeah, a guy on YouTube called the 718 Motor Pool, and he just, I think, just does, videos on police vehicles, I think. And he said that they used this paint scheme from 1973 to 1996, and it was the blue itself was often referred to as Grabber Blue, or also Great Northern Blue. I guess the Ford Motor Company used it a lot in the 70s, especially on Mustangs. But the original color was inspired from the Great Northern Railroad, who was using this color on their trains for, a couple decades before that. So,
What, blue and white?
yeah.
Really? That's interesting.
Because it's meant to be like, it's meant to evoke the big open sky or something like that. So I don't think the trains were using the white, stripe or anything, just that blue. So
Interesting. Okay.
yeah.
That actually is very interesting. And they come out of the Fed, and the first thing we see is a building that says on the Italian line, which is just really weird.
Yeah.
I mean, I looked it
And
up to see what it is, and the only thing I was able to find is that there was a shipping line between that did transatlantic voyages between the 30s and the 70s that left from Pier 90 on the Hudson River. And they had three main ships, the Leonardo da Vinci, Michelangelo, and the Raffaello.
Nice.
So, they're only missing one more to make
Yeah.
it a proper Ninja Turtle.
That's right. I think the Italian Line is a restaurant of some kind because I went through the minute and there's a poster on the corner of the building that says, I think it says Italian cuisine. Like, if you just freeze frame it and just,
Yeah, I for some reason I did think it was a restaurant at first, but then, I mean, it looks like it's taking up the whole building. That's also really weird. Unless
Well, a
it's
lot
just
of, no, I mean,
the
a lot
bottom
of,
floor.
yeah, that's what it would be. It wouldn't be, I don't think the entire building, would be the restaurant, but
I mean, according to the AI, it says there isn't a single Italian line restaurant in New York, but there are some notable Italian restaurants, including Patsy's Italian Restaurant, a Sinatra favorite. Carmine's, known for family style meals, Osterio del Bianco, a chic spot popular with tennis stars, and Via Carota, a rustic chic establishment, along with the iconic Little Italy neighborhood, a historic hub for Italian immigrants with many dining options. So, again, maybe at the time there was
Yeah.
a restaurant there. Don't really know. Interesting, you could see that it says something about no, did it say cuisine or cruises?
Oh, I don't know. Let me, where
I
are we
mean, I
at?
do see that it says Italian wine and then something I can't read what it says there. That's what is annoying sometimes you can't you can't really zoom in here. I don't know. It could be either. I won't say for sure that you're wrong. It could be that it's cuisine. It is something with a C, that's for sure.
Yeah.
No way of knowing. And as the car speeds off, the shot changes, and we're back to watching Mr. Blue just literally taking his time.
Yeah.
Before he was doing crossword puzzles, now he's reading a novel.
No, I think that's still his crossword puzzle book.
You
I think
think?
the back
Oh,
page, I think the
you're
back.
right. It does say, you're right. It does say crossword puzzle book. Okay, you're right. You're right. I apologize. It just looks like a novel. It doesn't look like
It
it.
does. Yeah, I was really thrown by it because I never, in one quick shot of this week, I did see he has a pen in his hand. But the rest of the time, I'm like, is he just reading the crossword? Is he just planning?
Yeah, exactly.
Is
He's
he
doing
that
it in
kind of
his head.
psycho? Yeah, exactly.
And it's like, can I figure it all out just by remembering? Don't know. And then we see him clearly looking into the whole thing, and then the shot changes again, and we see the view from Mr. Green's eyes of what's going on the train itself. You see Mr. Brown at the back door. We see Mr. Gray at the on the. It looks like he's at the side door, but it also looks like as if he's possibly sitting on the drunk woman. I'm not for sure. It's
He's,
very weird.
yeah, he's right next to that lady.
Yeah, but like, where are her legs if he's that close to her? Unless her legs are just on the floor and she's falling over like that. I don't know.
I think she's just slumped over. I think he's like resting on like a bar
Yeah, yeah,
that's,
yeah. Yeah, he's definitely resting on the bar there. And people are pollute. They've no idea what's going on.
Yeah.
And Green just looks around a little sympathetically at what's going on, and then the shot changes again. We see the motorcycles just fly by as the police car follows them. And they do a great shot here of the cinematography where we basically get to it's as if we're on the front of this car that's just flying down the street. And it's even going so fast that you can't even read the signs. Because when you try and pause it to see the signs, it all just completely out, completely blurry. As they're flying through the city, you can see that they passed the chemical bank. That's the one thing you can tell. there's like drugstores and things like that, and it's nice the way they do that. And
yeah.
And then we're back in the main train dispatch station, and we hear one of the guys go, "Nell Street, how long is that train up to?" And then we just hear a whole bunch of people talking at the same time. I've mentioned numerous times that I just find it hilarious that these guys all look like they're DJs.
Yeah,
the mics, right in front of their faces there,
mm-hmm.
and stuff like that. But they're still pretty busy, even though everything else is going on. And then we get another shot of Garber trying to figure out what he's supposed to be doing here. You know, like what plan does he have?
You know, right.
How is he going to be able to fix things? And then we're back with the cops. And we see that, the two motorcycles followed by the police car in the back. And then the shot changes. And once again, we're getting it from the viewpoint of the police car as it's, watching the two motorcycles in front of him. And one of them, one of the guys looks at his watch and goes, 8 minutes. We're just not going to make it.
Yeah, I like
Albert,
that guy.
Albert doesn't think that they have a chance.
Yeah.
So, and as he says that, people are going to have to wait another 24 hours because that's the end of that minute. So did you have anything else you wanted to add about this particular minute?
No, not really. I didn't have much on this one.
Okay, fair enough. All right, so every Tuesday we have a segment called the Blues Day Tuesday, where my guests will give their top five movies featuring Robert Shaw. So why don't you once again start with your number five and work your way up?
Well, I've seen four Robert Shaw movies, so number four it would be this movie. Then in number three, I would put From Russia with Love. And then number two is Robin and Marion. And then, of course, number one would be Jaws.
Okay. That is a very nice list, even though it only has four.
Yeah.
Yeah, you couldn't have found one more to watch this few weeks.
Right.
That's okay. Perfectly all right. You first of all, you're not the first guest to not have... five. So
yeah,
and the other guest only had two, so yeah, you're good from that perspective. You're one up on him on that
one. Well, as long as I'm beating somebody, that's all that matters.
That's right. And you're also not the first person to mention Robin and Marion, so that's good.
Yeah, I only just recently, well, within the last year, came to that movie, so that was, it was really good. So I struggled with that one because it's like, did I like that performance more than I liked him as Red Grant, in From Russia with Love? And that's a, that's a good performance, and it kind of established sort of that henchman, with intelligence, sort of.
Yes. True.
But.
Okay. All right. So every day we have a segment called Name That Remake, where I will spin the wheel and give my guest a few clues, and they'll try and guess what movie we're talking about that was remade. So let's spin the wheel and see what we get. And around the wheel we'll go. The original movie was made in 1978. And the remake was in 2010.
Okay, 78, 2010.
It's about a prominent female ice skater who gets injured during the course of her training and has to try and figure out what to do with the rest of her career and life.
You said the original was 78?
Yes, the original was 78 and the remake was 2010.
Okay. Based on the description, that makes me think of The Cutting Edge, but there's no way that was 78. That had to have been late 80s.
I think Cutting Edge was even like 90 something. I think it was like 93, 94. That was with Tate Donovan, wasn't it?
I'm thinking of the one with
yeah, it was D.B. Sweeney.
D.B. Sweeney, and, yeah.
Moira Kelly. That was 92.
Yeah.
Okay.
Really? Huh.
Yeah, but that's, I would have. But that the person who gets injured there is the hockey player.
Right. Yeah.
This is the female character is the one who gets injured.
I have no idea. I can't think of any ice skating movies, you know.
Okay, so the movie from 1978 was starring Robbie Benson and Lynn Holly Johnson.
And, yeah.
The remake in 2010 was with Taylor Firth, Rob Mays, and Henry Zerny. Zerny? I don't even know how to pronounce
it. Oh, okay. I know him. Right. No, the other names are nobodies to me. No, I don't have a clue.
Okay, so the name of these movies is Ice Castle.
Okay.
I actually only knew about the original movie of this because my sisters used to love watching the original. So it was something that was constantly playing either on video or on cable at the time and stuff like that. So, you know, I always knew that there was this weepy, teenage girl movie about ice skating called The Ice Castles. You know, I've seen it. It's pretty good. Not great.
Sure.
But, okay. So, Travis, would you like to tell everyone where they can find Travis Bow?
Sure. You can find me over on Real Comic Heroes, where I'm looking at comic book movies in release order. And then, as of this recording, we've just done Ghost World with Thora Birch and Scarlett Johansson. Coming up on From Hell. That should be pretty recent when this comes out. So we're in 2001. So we're about to get into 2002.
All right. Very cool. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Rob Minute. You can find me on Facebook. Find me on Twitter. You can find me on Instagram. You can find me on my website, MovieRobMinute.com. And if you want to send me an email, you can send it to MovieRobMinute@MovieRob.net. So until tomorrow,
Gesundheit.